Thanks for downloading this show from PC One. Before we get rolling, here's a word from one of the folks who helped bring you this podcast. He's defeated every champion from every organization the sport of mixed martial arts has ever seen and retired from the octagon as the biggest draw and the industry's highest paid athlete of all time. And now Chael Sonnen's on podcast1.com. And for that, you're welcome.
What's happening, guys? Happy Friday. I'm glad we can all meet again. We got a lot of stuff going on. Joel showed up down here with a page full of notes. He started reading some of them to me. I said, hold on, man. Let's turn the recorder on because I do have some thoughts on some of this. Joel, before we get going, today's show is brought to us by Audible.com. Now, you know the deal with Audible. You can get anything on Audible that you want. I mean, there's comedy on there. You get podcasts on there, commercial free, I might add. Audible has, 180,000 different titles you can choose from, 250,000, something crazy like that. But here's the biggest deal with Audible. It's books on tape, essentially. I mean, they will read the book to you. And that's what I go there for. You can get podcasts and comedy. You can do all sorts of stuff. I like the books. And that's the biggest part of their business. And what I get for telling the fans about this is I had 4 months. They've extended it to 6 months that I get to go in and use this. So all I ask of the fans, go over there and enjoy it. Go to audibletrial.com/Chael. They're going to give you 30 days for free. They believe you're going to love the service so much that then you're going to sign up and pay. That's your decision to make. But here's what I want out of it. If you have a book that is nonfiction and entertaining, just tweet it to me at Chael Sonnen and make a recommendation before my time runs out. I want to get some books. And I just took one in, Joel, called Denial. And it was about a woman who was talking about World War II and talking about the Holocaust, and she was doing this over in England. She was doing speaking tours and educating people, and she had a guy came out that challenged her at one of her speaking engagements. And he said, show me one piece of evidence that this ever happened. He was a Holocaust denier. So she basically defended herself and said, hey, this guy's an idiot, basically. Well, the guy sued her for slander because he was making a business off of these denials. And he argued in court that she damaged him, that she disparaged him. Now, where this became interesting is she was an American woman. And so when she had a lawyer up in the UK, the first thing she told the lawyer, she said, hey, it's innocent until you're presumed innocent until proven guilty in the US, not so in the UK. If somebody sues you on a slander charge like this, you are guilty until you can defend yourself. So it just turns into a whole mess for her. And this guy, now this is making his business grow. This lawsuit is creating PR and a mess. And, they went and wrote a book about the very book I'm telling you about called Denial. If anybody wants to check it out, it turns into a whole mess. I don't actually want to tell you the ending. The ending is very interesting and not quite what you would expect. But if you want to check out Denial there, I'm making a recommendation for the viewers, but I want the listeners to make a recommendation to me. That's all I'm getting out of this deal. So I expect you guys to honor. Go to audibletrial.com/Chael. Get yourself 30 free days. Pay me back, though. Send me a tweet at Chael Sonnen and make a recommendation. I only want nonfiction, and I want it to be entertaining. Joel?
I wonder if I can actually sit down this entire episode and do a decent job.
Let's see, man. I'm going to bet against you.
Yeah, I would too.
Yeah, because of the sit-down part. I think you'll do a decent job. It's the sit-down part. Why do you stand? Did your back hurt, or what is that that you'd rather... I don't know anyone that would rather stand than sit. You'd rather stand. I'd sit every time.
I have no idea, but I know that generally when I sit down, my voice drops and you yell at me. So I'm
your voice has dropped. I've actually noticed that you are a little bit more sedated when you're sitting down. No, you know, I do sedated because you were telling me something, and I said, let's turn the recorders on. I want to hear this. But so it's the World Series of Fighting.
Okay, you want to go there?
Is essentially rebranding. Is that a fair term? They're rebranding. They're definitely restructuring. Tell me what you've got on the World Series, because they're even renaming themselves.
Okay,
is that true?
This information is actually taken from Pony Boy over at MMAfighting.com, our friend Ariel. And the World Series of Fighting...
Wait, why'd you call him Pony Boy?
Well, because I said that all he ever talks about is, you know, hey, somebody said that they have two ponies and it's better your pony, so I just... You know, he's always stirring the shit.
You're calling Ariel Pony Boy.
He's Pony Boy.
No, I need to know that. I didn't know you were calling him that. So that's the new term.
Ariel's Pony Boy. It's not a bad nickname.
I was going to say, it's not really an insult.
It's not bad.
All right, so go on. So Ariel gave you some scoop. You took this from his website, MMA Fighting. There's their credit. Tell me what's up.
Okay, so the big news, and this is what seems to be that the fighters have been asking for something like this for years, is they're the Professional Fight League, they're going to send the fighters a monthly check. Ray Sefo says the fighters will receive a monthly paycheck. Each fighter will compete in three regular season fights. Those with the best records will move on to a playoff and then the championship round. It is unclear at this time what would happen if fighters end up with identical records. But the big news out of here is what they're doing is, I believe, didn't the IFL pay their fighters monthly? I could be wrong, but based on just that bit of information,
it gave you a feel of the IFL days. Yeah, you're right about that. The IFL fighters were treated similar to other professional sports, such as, you know, NBA by example or NFL by example, where they have actual contracts, they receive monthly checks. Now that backfired on the IFL when guys started getting checks, and all of a sudden when the fight rolled around, they would just sit it out. And the IFL would be going, wait a minute, I've been paying you on stuff. They almost treated them too good. But, yeah, it does have a little bit of a feel of the IFL. I'll tell you this. I'll add this, and I don't know if it's part of your story. But the gentleman who has now bought the controlling interest of World Series of Fighting, they're renaming themselves. Is that what you said?
Yeah, the Professional Fight League. Now, okay. They're going to stay. Here, let me touch on this real quick. Because you had mentioned that they weren't going, the World Series of Fighting wasn't going to have any more events this year. They are. While the inaugural season is set to officially kick off in January, sources say the promotion is currently scheduled to hold at least four more events in 2017. At this time, those dates are June 30th, September 30th, October 30th, and November 4th. The organization's NBCSN TV deal expires at the end of 2017, and according to sources, they do not currently have a new deal in place with the network or any other for 2018, though those talks are currently underway.
All right, so NBC Sports Network is what you're trying to say there, and fine. I've heard that they're going to do two shows this year. I thought they already held one, which meant there was going to be one more. But however that plays out, here's where I want to make sure I'm clear, because we're educating some people now. I didn't know this. Our listeners didn't know this. The World Series of Fighting essentially will be no more. Now, those same guys, but they're going to rebrand. They're not going to come out as WSOF. Am I correct on that? They're coming out as Professional Fight League.
In 2018.
In 2018. Okay, great. You then brought in the IFL. And yes, it does sound similar to the IFL, just in that one regard of how they're going to structure payments. Now, that's a wonderful thing for the athletes that they've been asking for the longest time. It did backfire on the IFL, and it drove Kurt and Sheamus absolutely insane, because they're going, wait a minute, we're treating you so well and doing what you asked to be done, and now you're double-crossing us when it's actually time to show up for work, which in this case is to go and do the fight.
I'm glad you mentioned that, because what do you do when a fighter pulls out?
Sure.
Or what do you do when he misses weight?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you this, and this could, I hope that this works, and it could work. They're going to have some conflicts. I guess that's all I'm saying. As a guy that's been around this sport for a long time, and their new owner is as smart and as accomplished as he is, he can't make that same claim. He has not been around it for an extended period of time. So he's looking at, what are the Washington Wizards? Is that a basketball? That's a hockey team, isn't it?
Wizards are... they might have changed their... Yeah, the Wizards is basketball. Okay. It used to be Washington Bullets, and now it's the Washington Wizards.
Either way, though, to my point, so he comes from a different professional sports franchise and thinks, wait a minute, MMA's got some major legs here. Let's take some things that we've got from more of these mainstream established sports. Let's do that with MMA. I get where his mindset is, and I'm pulling for him. I'm just saying he is going to run into some conflicts, particularly, you know, we used to do an eight-man tournament in MMA. That's how it was. If you go back and you watch the first UFCs, it was an eight-man tournament. The guys fought three times in one night, and that went away, and a lot of people said, well, yeah, the commissions won't sanction that anymore. Well, that's not really accurate. There's some commissions that will do it right now, such as Arizona, by example, but you could go ask other commissions to make an exception and do it. The reason the promoters got away from it is when the fighters started becoming better, those fights started being harder. And when those fights started being harder, they started being longer. When they started being longer, now a guy just can't do two and three of them in the same night, and all of a sudden your tournament falls apart. You come out, you advertise, you promise a tournament, and there was guys that would make it to the main event, to the final, and not be able to walk out there and do it. And now all of a sudden, oh, I'm bringing in a replacement for the final, but that guy hasn't fought twice tonight, and this guy he's got to take on has already fought. It just wasn't apples versus apples anymore. It just threw that whole thing off. Okay, fine. Let's just do one-offs. And that's where the sport went. The same thing kind of happened with the IFL, where they would get ready and they'd be promising things and building it over a year, and then all of a sudden somebody can't walk out there and do it. I really like, in theory, what I'm hearing so far about professional fight league. I get where, in theory, in a back room, you put some brain power together and you come up with a structure like this. And that's something that this sport lacks as well, is structure. Structure has also been hard for this sport because guys don't just walk out there and do it. They have no problem with missing weight, with pulling out for an injury or an illness, and things just start to fall apart. And you go, wait a minute, I've worked an entire season on doing this, not just one night, not just a one night tournament. I've built this over an entire season. Now you're telling me I've got to reschedule the game. And a guy like that has a Washington Wizards and NBA mindset, that's never happened. There has never been a playoff game where one team wanted it relocated or moved down the line. There's never been a Super Bowl or an NBA championship where one team wasn't going to show up. And so I'm just arguing that he will have some conflicts as this comes a little bit closer. You already read one of them. One of them was, well, what if guys have similar records? What's going to happen? And it's not going to be a coin toss. There's not going to be a backroom deal, and there shouldn't be. It will go to the most popular guy, and it should go to the most popular guy. That's got to be a part of the sport where you've got to have the mandate of the crowd. One thing that you left out, Joel, and that I got from a different article, was whoever does win each weight class each season, do you know what the purse is?
A quarter?
No.
$1 million?
No. $1 million.
Ooh.
The whole thing. Not a quarter. They get,
oh, really?
$1 million. Each guy, each weight class. So they're willing to spend some money. They're willing to invest in that. In and of itself is going to get you some major PR and a major play with publicity. I like the things they're doing. I'm coming at this from a critical standpoint because that's more entertaining, but I do foresee some conflicts because it's already been attempted. So I study the history of the sport. I know the history of it. I can just point to a few times. Well, actually, that was tried, and here's what they ran into. If they have that in mind, and this brain trust is equipped with that, then they can put plans in place. And Ray Cephalos certainly knows his history as well. So if Ray's sticking around, I think that they probably will have some plans there. But as viewers, and you and I that are viewers, our listeners, we want to be explaining that. If you're going to come in with some big structure and a big plan, great. That's wonderful. We just need to understand it so then we can buy into it.
The thing that excites me is opportunity. Okay, there's only so much opportunity in the landscape of MMA today. There's the big two promotions, which is the UFC and Bellator, and then now the World Series of Fighting, which is going to become the Professional Fight League. But the talent, the labor force is out there. I would tell Ray Cepho, get on a plane, come to Gracie Baja, and I know off the top of my head there's five fighters that I would be fighting three times a year. Jake, Ryan, Ricky, Carson, and I'm missing one.
Well, I think you've got a few to choose from. Sunshine... has got to be in there, but Tyree's been sliding.
There you go.
A little bit
I'm
too.
Sorry about Tyree. I mean,
He's 18-1. That's a big deal. He's got a twin brother that signed with Bellator. You know, we have seen major success, whether it was the Hughes brothers or the Ellenberger boys, the Diaz brothers. We've seen real success with brothers that come out and do it, the Shamrocks, with brothers that come out and do it. And it's like, hey, guys, don't forget, you know, Tyrell. He got a big opportunity here, but he got a twin brother, and that twin brother happens to be 18-1. Don't overlook him.
You know, there's been a lot of camera crews in there lately. I think Sunshine's doing something. Spike TV was here. Paige is here. So there's always cameras in there. And the one thing that they don't have the because they want a shot. They want a shot. I'm like, guys, wait until the sparring starts. Just wait. The shots are in sparring, okay? Because that place is getting nasty. And I'm sure they're all over the place. I'm sure that's not just that one. It's the one I'm going to. I'm sure there's several others in Portland, in Vegas. And the labor force is out there. And there's some cats out there that will get down if you give them an opportunity. I hope this leads to opportunities. I hate to see a guy like Jake Smith – have to lose 28 pounds or 30 pounds, sell his tickets, and go fight when I know he's good enough to be on a big show?
No, I fully agree, and you're right. It's about opportunity, and when somebody like this and this gentleman with the Washington Wizards, and that's the best I can say about him. I don't know his name, never met him. When he comes in and he looks at a space like this and says, "All right, I think there's some opportunity to start getting a little bit more organized, to listen to some of the complaints of the guys and starting to serve those needs." When he does that, he has an expectation that you're going to appreciate that and you're going to pay him back. I really hope the athletes do that because they could have something really neat and special. And they already have something unique here with this structure. However, it's hurting cats with MMA. It's hurting cats with some of these guys. And he needs to ask them straight up, when I call you to come to work, are you going to come to work? And that's the guys that he signs. And we'll let the talents and the characters and the tickets and everything fall into place behind that. Number one, when I call you to come to work, are you going to show up? And I think he will be stunned at how many guys' answer is maybe. Well, maybe doesn't work in a business plan. If I'm going to put this money forward, I'm going to come forward, I'm going to listen to your complaints, and I'm going to satisfy them and make them go away, there's got to be a level of appreciation. You got to make sure that I have a chance at this thing, too. And that is a really tough part about MMA. Let me tell you something, Joel. There's all this talk, and it's kind of died down, but there's still talk about there, this phenomenon of fighters unions. You've certainly heard about that. We've covered that on here. And that was really big a little bit of time ago. It's kind of going away. And I don't know that I have an opinion, but I'm open to hearing the discussion. Should there be a union? Should there be whatever? But before we get there, where's that money going to come from? I mean, guys were talking about retirements and pensions and a cut of it and all of a sudden. Where's that money going to come from? And nobody has seemed to want to tackle that answer. Well, it's just going to come. It's just going to come. Well, it doesn't work that way. Well, the NFL's in you. Well, hold on. The NFL is the only business model that I personally have ever heard of, ever, that is guaranteed to succeed. I don't even know of Exxon and these major Apple, you know, the major oil companies and technology companies. None of them can even fall into this category. The NFL is guaranteed. Absolutely guaranteed by contract from the networks. Every single team within the league is given $156 million a year. That is before you sell a single ticket, a single beer, or a single bag of popcorn. Not to mention merchandising. You are going to get $156 million a year. You have a salary cap of 130 by rule. So you have a profit to run your company of $26 million for operating costs before you sell a ticket, a beer, or a single bag of popcorn, or your merchandising rights. They are guaranteed to succeed. So when you want to come in and do a collective bargaining and figure out, hey, who gets what and how are we going to structure this, there's a way to do it so that the guys, once they do collectively bargain, can be assured those checks are going to come in. That money's good and that money's going to clear. And then the bosses can also say, okay, now here's what we need to do. So that it makes sense for us too. That business model can't fail. $156 million versus $130 million salary cap. It's locked in. Well, MMA's not like that. It's a huge, tremendous gamble. And I just wanted to make that point. It needs to be considered. I want to see these guys do well. It does surprise me. World Series of Fighting definitely has millions and million dollars worth of brand and brand recognition. People do know in that space what that means. If they see that on a TV guide, World Series of Fighting, they know what it is. And they're going to do away with all that and rename it. That surprised me a little bit. I don't have an opinion if that's right or wrong, but that did surprise me. You know, it's been a long time. We even saw this with the UFC. The UFC was there, and when the Fertittas and Dana stepped in, they kept that name around. They saw that, hey, there's some branding and some recognition here. I don't think we need to rename it and then make all these new T-shirts and posters and educate everybody on what we're doing. But their structure is so much different than what we've seen in the past that possibly they just want a full facelift. Listen, forget the whole World Series of Fighting thing. We're going to keep those contracts. But aside from that, we're starting at square one. I think that's probably what the thought process is. Do you agree?
I'm not sure. I'm just stuck on I just want more opportunity. You know, I've been a fan forever. You know, in the back of the dealership, I had the opportunity to, you know, watch the legends of legends fight and become champions and participate a little bit. And then just got out of it, except as a fan. And now, you know, through the podcast and now I'm training, I see it a little bit closer. And my big thing is opportunity. I want the guys to have more opportunity. I hope this works. But the one thing that I have seen a difference in fighters is if you're a professional fighter, if that's who you are, your job's to go fight. Now, I understand guys cannot afford to just train. That's very minimal, the guy that can afford to just train and go fight on a lower scale. But my point is if you're a professional fighter, you have to take as many opportunities that you can get available to you in every aspect. If it's $350, go get it. Because the reason you're a professional fighter is because you're going to be the best in the world or one of the best in the world. And if you're not, you better keep your job.
Yeah, I hear your point on that. Looking at it from a different perspective, though, and here's where I was trying to take it. Cheering for the gentleman who bought 60%, cheering for the guy at the Washington Wizards who's coming over into this new space and wanted to work out for him. It is really important that he has the fighter with the right mindset in front of everything else. He has to have guys that are going to come. And when you brought up those names of Jake and Ryan and Tyree and Sunshine and Ricky, we go through the list. One thing about our gym, and I'm very proud of this, but our guys will show up. Our guys do not pull out of fights. They don't argue about the weight class or I'm not ready or I need more time or my shoulder's hurting me. They will show up and fight. And those are the kind of guys that you want because you're forming partners here. You can talk about, oh, they're 1099 versus this or a full-time employee. Bottom line is you're partners. You're going into business together. I get my piece and you get your piece and here's what you need to do and here's what I need to do, but we're all working together. Some guys don't have that mindset. And if you have guys that don't have that mindset, boy, you run into problems. And now all of a sudden you promise the fans something in some territory or some market or some venue somewhere who buys a ticket with a level of expectation and anticipation shows up and then that isn't delivered. And that's not good. And that's got residual effects. I can remember, Joel, a professional wrestling match that I went to with my buddy Justin and we were in the fifth grade. And one half of Demolition did not show up. That tag team match was promised to us. We were excited for them. We dressed up as Demolition on Halloween, and we loved these guys. One half did not show up. So one guy walked out there, and they brought somebody else in the back and made it his tag team partner. And I am resentful to this day because we were promised Demolition. We bought tickets. We showed up. We were excited, and they didn't come through. It's a big deal when somebody pulls out and it's become just kind of the norm. It's not the norm. If you say you're going to be somewhere, you got to be somewhere. If you're an NCAA team and you say you're going to bring your team, you need to bring your team. I've been to wrestling events where Oklahoma State came out versus Arizona State, the two Smith brothers, Leroy and John Smith, and Eric Larkin didn't come from Arizona State. And John Smith said to Leroy, you said you were going to bring your team. Well, you know, Larkin, I'm giving him a little break. Well, I don't care about his break. You said you were going to bring your team. And he called him on it publicly. I don't think the Smith boys go at it publicly very often. But I remember that. If you say you're going to bring it, you got to bring them. And you got to deliver. And that's one of the conflicts that promoters run into. The UFC had so much star. They feel it too. But they've built so much star power up in such big contracts, 366 athletes under contract, that if a guy pulls out, they can slip a new guy in, and boy, business moves forward. Everybody's happy. They didn't used to have that. But the other promotions aren't blessed with that. They don't have a roster that big and that deep and with those kind of name recognitions. And you can really hurt an organization. And it's like, hey, if you're going to go sign with somebody, you need to honor that guy. You need to honor the guy that took a chance on you and signed you by simply doing what you said you're going to do. You don't have to do anything else, nothing, but you got to do what you said you're going to do. And we're seeing too much in this business where guys aren't doing that, and there's a residual effect. And all the fighters, whether you like them or you don't like them or they're your rival, the bottom line is you are all in it together. And when the shows succeed and the industry does well, there is a residual domino trickle-down effect that rises everybody up. And one guy can throw that off. You get one brat that comes to the table that was supposed to headline a show, and all of a sudden he doesn't. And all of a sudden the tickets and the ratings are down. It affects everybody. And not only that night, it affects it in the future because it's all parlayed together. We're going to have a huge amount of attendance on us, Joel, a huge amount of eyeballs for Bellator New York City, June 24th, right? The pay-per-view. But we need to use that and use those eyeballs to then advertise and market the next event. It's a springboard. If something falls through on that card and not as many people tune in, we don't have as many people to then energize about the next event. And so it affects the next guys too. One decision, one bratty attitude, one wimp in the bunch can have a major domino effect on the entire future of the industry. And that's a really relevant thing that guys miss. I want this professional fight league to work out. I can just see they're going to have some conflicts. I just wanted to be ready for them. If they're ready for it, Ray Sefo's a master. Ray Sefo's going to do just fine. Ray Sefo, and I trust he will do this, just needs to know, here's the conflicts I'm going to have. How am I going to handle this situation?
I agree. We're both on the same page. Hey, have you checked out the Ultimate Fighter this year with TJ and Cody?
Yes.
Where do you want to start with that?
Well, where are you going to go with it? I already oversaw your notes. It was the lowest rated one of all time. Are you going to bring that up? Because I'm ready to handle that ball right now.
Take that. I wasn't going to talk about that because...
Okay. Numbers don't lie. There's nothing you can do. You can't say it wasn't the lowest rate. It was the lowest watched one in the history of ever for the series. But I'll tell you this. There's another number that matters, which is the overall season number where they come up with the mean and what was the overall. And I believe it's a 12-episode show. I'll make this point to you. I'll make this argument now, and we'll have to check back in almost 3 months to see if I'm right. But I'm telling you, I'm going to be. That was an excellent show. Garbrandt and TJ did an excellent job. So did the other guys. It was a really good show that just nobody watched. Why the anticipation was low, what happened, what factors came together, why they didn't, why, I think we could all just take guesses and none of us would know for sure. But I will tell you this, that those numbers are going to change. That was a really good show. I watched most of them. That was one of the better episodes, if not the best premiere. I'm going back last week's, if not the best premiere that I've seen. So I don't trust that number and everybody doom and gloom is going to be celebrating a downfall. I don't predict that at all. I think it's a really good series.
I'm pumped to watch it. And a couple of things I want to talk about on the first show is, you know, these guys, they you've done these things. So you can help walk me through this where Dana probably doesn't come over. Dana comes over, hits his spot and leaves or something. There's something, some problem going on. He comes over, takes care of it and leaves. Well, so they do a coin flip or somehow TJ gets to pick the first fight. And what he did was he picked the heaviest guy. He knew somebody from Cody's team was going to have a hard time making weight. And sure enough, this guy didn't make weight, or he quit before. He couldn't make weight. So what they did was it didn't. There was no advantage for TJ to do that. All they did was brought somebody else in, and this guy lost his opportunity. He couldn't make that weight. There was no advantage for that. And that struck me as, I don't think TJ knew the rules. I think for TJ to have done that, he would have been looking at it, well, it's a competition. I'm gaming the system. Well, he didn't game the system. All he did was cost a guy an opportunity. And again, it's his fault. That guy showed up 196 pounds, and he's supposed to fight at 171 pounds. But again, if that guy had a week or 10 days to get his weight down, he made it that far. That seemed to be a little chintzy on TJ's part, only if he knew it wasn't going to benefit him. So I don't think it did. Now, another thing that's going on.
Did you want me to respond to that, though, to tell you how that works behind the scenes? So TJ came in with a wrestler's mindset. This is essentially dual meet, team versus team. Each guy weighs in. You go out and have the match. If one guy doesn't make weight, your team wins by forfeit. That guy's scratched. So TJ came in with that mindset of, hey, we might just be able to get one here. Now, the Ultimate Fighter doesn't work that way because it's a show. The fans are promised a fight. There has to be a fight. So they don't have an NCAA set there. They have on the fly, we can make matchmaking adjustments. That's the part that TJ... I got why TJ did it, and I actually liked it. I liked his strategy. I didn't have the same mindset as you. But yeah, he didn't know they were just going to bring somebody else in, because that's not the fight he picked. If he would have known that, he would have picked something else. So the rules to that aren't quite as established. One of the rules there that you have to accept, whether you like it or not, is that the rules can change. That's one of the rules. The rules are... the rules can and will change so that the show must go on.
Another thing. So Cody's appearing as a bully right now, and TJ's kind of letting it happen a little bit. But Cody's coming out the winner and being the bully. You know, and apparently there's some tape somewhere. I heard about this like 6 months ago, that Cody had a tape of him knocking out TJ, and he has it on his phone, and TJ was like, "You don't have it. That never happened." Well, now Cody's saying, "Hey, I'm going to release it for $50,000 to TMZ and give that money to charity. You choose the charity." And now TJ's like, "Well, go ahead. I don't care what happened. Well, did it happen or not? Did he knock you out or not? Because that's relevant, whether it was in training or not. I want to see the video if it happened."
It is very interesting that Cody has been the bully in it, as you put it, because TJ, the more established fighter, they were teammates, but more importantly, TJ's older. Right? That's the way gyms work. You come into a gym, you concede to the older guy. There's just a respect factor there. You just do. And Cody's like, "Nah, I'm not following that rule. I don't care if I'm young or not. You left the gym. I'm the world champion, and I'm going to beat you next." I find it interesting and compelling, but I also found it surprising because, to your initial statement, TJ has kind of just let it go. TJ hasn't taken that, "Hey, I'm the big brother. I'm the older guy. I was here before you were." He hasn't really taken that stance with him. He's kind of just let him go. But it did surprise me.
Yeah, I'm falling down the rabbit hole quick, because two things. TJ's last fight with Lineker, TJ's performance was incredible. It was great, and Lineker's a great fighter. But I'm starting to, I'm leaving out the fact that Cody beat Dominic, and he did it in fantastic fashion. So I believe, like I'm saying, TJ, I believe I'm going to fall down the rabbit hole, and by the end of this thing, I'm going to say Cody's going to win.
Yeah, well, who knows? I mean, again, we talk about history, but it does go to the younger guy. We'll see what happens there. Those guys certainly have a feel for it, you know, and I don't think it's a clear feel. TJ has some level of respect for Cody, but Cody's got some level of apprehension towards TJ where he's still trying to get in his head. So, I mean, I think those practice sessions are a lot closer than the guys who are still there and just need to back their current teammate Cody. I think they were a little closer than people are letting on. That's my own opinion, but I could tell you, Cody had no problem taking this fight, but neither did TJ.
Okay. You ready? I'm going to move on.
I'll say this one final thing, because you brought up the Lineker fight. That might have been the best fighter that sport's ever seen. I'm ready to make that statement. It was that impressive. The TJ Dillashaw that fought Lineker might be the best fighter the sport's ever seen. Mike Tyson had fought Michael Spinks. And at that time, it was the highest paid boxing fight of all time. Tyson got $33 million and Spinks got $29 or $30. Highest of all time, ever, any weight class. I mean, you get it, right? Highest paid box fight of all time. Mike Tyson not only knocked him down three times, but finished the fight in 91 seconds. And people in the know say that that was the greatest boxer of all time. That moment, that there was never a boxer to live that could beat that specific Mike Tyson.
I see where you're going with that. I like that.
I really think TJ's performance is that good. I mean, I know how that's going to, but I really think that. And I don't miss any fights. I watch them all. I really think that TJ Dillashaw that fought John Lineker might be the single best fighter that one, that night, that moment,
sure,
that the sport's ever seen.
Yeah, the devil's advocate on that is it going to play out the same, and can Cody get up?
Sure. Well, they argued that with Mike Tyson, too. They said, hey, as good as he was never as good as he was that. It was just that moment in time.
Hello there, you. It's me, Jay Moore. You know me from the More Stories podcast. I'm a comedian, I'm an actor, and I talk to people that fascinate me, like Brandon Boyd from Incubus, super funny Jim Jefferies, Jay Leno, Charlie Sheen, Lakers owner Jeannie Buss, and a whole lot more. Download a few episodes of More Stories now. More Stories podcast every Monday. Podcast One app, iTunes, podcastone.com.
You're welcome. You're welcome with Chael Sonnen.
Okay, before I get to these notes, I do want to talk about your fight card. Oh my God. They just keep coming. So they lose
Mo.
King Mo. And we're like, oh man, we don't. And they bring in Ryan Bader for a title fight.
Well, Phil Davis. Davis was the new one. Yeah, it was going to be Mo versus Bader.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. Sorry about that.
So they slip in Phil. And, you know, I'll remind you, and a lot of people forgot this happened. Those guys fought before. And it was an upset. Phil was supposed to win that. Supposed to be a good fight. But Phil was supposed to win that. Bader beat him. And that is an interesting fight. And that's going to be free. That's the main event of the Spike TV card, which is called Bellator 180. And then it'll roll over to the pay-per-view, which is called Bellator NYC. That is a big fight, though. That's a big fight to just bring in at the last minute.
Another one that got announced, Aaron Pico.
Oh, they announced an opponent?
Aaron Pico has a dance partner against Zach Freeman. Again, I'm sorry, I don't know who Zach Freeman is, but I do know who Aaron Pico is. And now, Aaron Pico didn't go to college. He went straight into the Olympic Training Center. So arguably the best college high school wrestler when he was getting out of high school didn't go to college to compete. He went straight to the Olympic Training Center, and I think he took third at the Olympic trials.
Aaron Pico was second. He lost to Molinaro.
Oh, that's right.
4-4. 4-4 tie with the criteria.
Sorry about that, Aaron. So my question is, how much MMA has he been doing? Do you know?
Well, I know that Aaron Pico boxed as a kid. I know he also went over to Europe and competed in some kind of a pancration system that they have over there, and he won two separate occasions. So he's been fighting a long time. I also know that he signed with Bellator a meaningful period of time ago, but was allowed to suspend his debut until after the Olympic trials. And the Olympic trials ended about, 9 months ago? But he didn't come out. So everybody's just kind of been waiting for it. I also know that he is not going to participate in today's U.S. Open, which is going on in Las Vegas right now. And he would have been the number two seed behind Molinaro. And he's not participating. So when you ask, is he fighting? I know he's training. He's prepared. I respect this guy that's agreed to take the fight with him. I mean, the behind the scenes on that is nobody else would.
One of the things that happens to great wrestlers a lot of times that get into MMA is they are phenomenal, world-class wrestlers, which is incredible. But then they get out there and you realize, oh, wait, we've got a long way to go before this is a finished product. Now, that math always works. That talent and hard work always works. It gets those guys to the top. What doesn't work is when one of those guys loses one of their first couple matches and says, yeah, I'm out. I'm not going to go through the training again. I think Pico might come in and surprise us and be like, oh wow, he's way further down the talent pool than we thought he was.
You know,
he's way more accomplished. And he's 20 years old, 21 tops?
Yeah, I believe he's 20. He was 19 last year. I believe he's 20 right now, even if he's had his birthday already. That is what the rumor is that he is the ringer of them all, because they're doing this thing with the Fab Five, and they brought over Ruth and Tyrell, and these guys are undefeated and doing a great job, but supposedly Pico is going to be the diamond of the bunch.
And now, so is he a 55-pounder?
Well, let's do the math there. So he wrestled Molinaro at 66 kilograms, which converts to 145.5 pounds, roughly.
Okay, so he's a 45-pounder.
Well, he could be a 45-pounder, but that was a year ago, and he's a young guy. His body's only going to grow. I imagine he's going to be a 70-pounder when this is all said and done. If I was to make a prediction, it's at 155. But, I mean, let's find out. I don't know. Let's see what happens there. Tell me the name of his opponent again.
Zach Freeman.
Yeah, we're going to give Mr. Freeman his credit right away. Freeman could go win that fight. We don't know a damn thing about Freeman. Freeman could be a ringer, too. But the bottom line is Freeman has some courage, because that was a really hard match to get done for Bellator, because you do have other people saying what we just said about Pico, how interesting this is and what this guy's backstory is and how rough and young he is. And so there was just no one that could match up with him. You couldn't get a guy that didn't have experience that would agree to do it. You couldn't get a guy that had a few wins I mean, they went to a guy specifically, and I won't say his name. I don't want to embarrass him, but he was 3-0. And so they tried to get him to do the fight. That's a little harder competition they wanted to give a guy that's never done it before, but it is what it is. You get him whoever he can fight. And that guy said, no, that's too hard of a fight. Why would I fight a guy that's 0-0? I'm on a little streak right now, and I know the reputation of this guy.
Could you imagine somebody calling you and say, hey, this guy wants to fight you, and you saying no?
I mean, no.
It just that's just...
I don't know where that came. I mean, I remember the day when that came, when I started getting phone calls, what do you think about fighting this guy? And I remember even where I was in my house and everything. And I remember thinking, huh? Who cares what I think? It was the first time I was ever even asked that question. It's like, why would you ask me what I think? When's the fight? And what's the weight? That's it. And I remember when they asked me thinking, Can you say no? Is that even part of it where you could say, no, I'm not going to fight that guy? And now the whole sport's that way. Hey, would you fight this guy? What do you think about this guy? Hey, go study this guy's tapes. Like, when do these questions come from? If I'm the matchmaker, I'm not going to do that. And it's not to be a dick about it. It's just, I just wouldn't even think to ask a guy, will you fight? Yeah, I got you under contract. I got him under contract. Here's the match I'm doing. What am I missing here?
Nothing. Here's a note. Here's a note that I think is a good talking point. You know, this sport is so unforgiving, you know, and you have to be at the right place at the right time. Well, before there was Uriah Faber, there was a guy that you fought with who many thought for a long time was the best fighter in the world. And his name was Miguel Torres, and he is officially retired from MMA.
I saw Miguel retired. Yeah, I saw that. Good for him. You know, he was on a streak there. He had one loss. But then he hadn't lost again, and he got it. He got up to something stupid. I mean, it was like 31-1, 28-1. It was some crazy MMA record. And you know, the disappointing part for him is he was also on that cusp. And there's a few guys you could talk. Ramiro Sato. I mean, there's a few guys where you could go through that were that size. And a lot of those guys just didn't get their opportunity. Those weight classes are still new. People forget that. You know, the women are new, but so are the lighter guys. Yeah, Bellator wasn't doing it. UFC wasn't doing it. Pride never did do it. Strikeforce never did do it. WEC tapped into it, went all the way down to 145. I don't think they even had the 35. And a lot of people think they did because Dominic was there, but that was actually at 45. 25, forget it, man. Nobody was doing that. So the point I'm trying to make is Miguel had a very meaningful amount of time, very meaningful and big window where he was the man, but he didn't get the recognition for that. So we'll give him a little bit right now.
Absolutely.
But he called it a career. Well, good for him.
All right. Rumors.
I love rumors, but I wish you just came on with rumors sometimes. I think the rumors, I prefer to speculate than to actually know. What do you got, man?
All right. Tyrone Woodley versus Nick Diaz could be in the works for the next world welterweight title fight.
Is Tyrone Woodley any relation
to Tyron? To Tyron? How do you say it?
Well, I had it until you said that. To yeah. Tyron Woodley.
Yeah, it's
the
a hard
UFC
one. That's why
champion.
I go T-Wood.
There you go.
I T-Wood do it every time. It kills me.
T-Wood will keep you safe. All right, so T-Wood versus, spit it out,
Nick Diaz.
Okay, is in the works. I am going to sell that rumor. I do. If that's a stock, I'm shorting it. I don't believe that. Nick Diaz's last fight was a draw. It was at a different weight class, and it was a really long time ago. I hope that that fight happens, and so do the fans. But that one almost seems too good to be true. I'm going to short that.
Okay. All right. Here's some. This has been going back and forth for a while. So Bisping versus GSP. They had this announcement a couple months ago, it feels like a couple months ago. And it looked like it was going to be targeted for International Fight Week, which is, you know, July 9th, I think it's that date. And now GSP's like, hold on, you know, I'm not going to be fighting until September. And Bisping's come out and said, dude, if you're not fighting until September, I'm going to go ahead and fight Romero on International Fight Week. Do you think if they're not fighting until September, Bisping would really go ahead and take that fight with Romero?
No, if they're going to fight in September, then they're going to wait for that fight. Bisping would be on board, George is on board, and the company's on board unless something is changing that hasn't been revealed to us. So no, I don't. But what in the hell is that? Is there a rumor that GSP isn't going to be fighting Bisping International Fight? I've never heard that.
Yeah, absolutely. He's now,
why is that though? Was that an USADA thing where he had to be in the pool X amount of time? What's the red tape there? George is certainly ready to fight. He was ready to fight when he came out and said, "I'm ready to fight."
Nobody knows.
How are we getting to September?
Well, nobody knows. In so much as about 3 weeks ago. Because we've had a bunch of UFCs. I think we had a pay-per-view and then two free shows 3 weeks in a row. Now we don't have one for 3 weeks. Well, I think two shows ago, Dana came out and said, "Yeah, we should have that date in the next week." Well, that time has come and gone. And the points that I'm seeing out of GSP is, yeah, it's end of summer or September. I'll be out there, and he'll wait.
Yeah, let's see what happens. I mean, you kind of caught me off guard with that one, but yeah, obviously something is up because, I mean, they've already spent money on that, right? I mean, that was announced, but Joel, you remember the press conference when Bisping showed up and he was drunk?
And loved it.
Yeah, no one really even cared about that fight. Okay, I'll watch that fight, but that was it. This wasn't a big one. And then that press conference is done, and we're like, when is this fight happening? I'm marking it on my calendar now. So they've already spent some money on that. So yeah, to not make an announcement, I do believe that there is something going on behind the scenes, but I sure as hell haven't heard about it.
Well, or maybe they're keeping it quiet because they have one of the biggest cards coming up May 13th.
Is
we'll
Romero
talk about
the guy you go after, though? I mean, wouldn't you anybody
no.
else? Wouldn't it be? I'm just matching styles there. That's a really hard fight. I mean, they're all really hard fights, but wouldn't he match a little better with Whitaker? Wouldn't he match? I mean, isn't there some other name you could pull out of the hat?
Well, why not Rockhold?
Well, they've already fought. There's not a lot of parity there, and Rockhold hasn't been in there for a while. Remember, Rockhold got in his dust up back and forth, and he finally worked through that, and then he's trying to get this Anderson fight. I mean, I don't know.
So,
you know what? You know what? By the way, Anderson just won his fight, and his fight with Bisping was controversial. You could bring Anderson in right now for a championship fight. You're going to get a little backlash you do every time you announce a championship fight. You could bring that fight in right now and get less backlash than you would on T-Word versus Nick.
I agree, and I'd love to see that. Whitaker has this great performance against Jacare, and then now he comes out and says, "Hey, I'm going to sit and wait for a title shot." And I'm like, "Why?" You know, when has that ever worked? And he even came out and said, "I have what everybody else doesn't have. I have time. If somebody else is going to wait a year for a title shot, they don't have time. I'm 26 years old. I have time." But I'm like, yeah, there's some other guys you could be fighting, Mr. Whitaker.
Now, I saw that headline too, and I did not read the article. Here's what I assumed. I assumed that they teed him up on something, and he said, "I would wait." If you're telling me that my next fight could be a title fight, but I have to wait to get it, I would wait. He isn't one of these guys that's now coming out and said, "I'm waiting, I'm not fighting anyone, I'm the number one contender." He's not talking stupid, is he?
Well,
that'll disappoint me if he does that.
He's kind of talking stupid. He's just basically saying, I just took out the number one guy in the world that they just paid a bunch of money for, and he was geared up to go through me and get a title shot. I just ran through him. Why wouldn't I be next? So until I find out, I'm not fighting.
Okay. I'll tell you how that story ends. Whitaker's going to be fighting somebody next, and it's not going to be for the title. However, there could be some opportunity in there if the George doesn't happen and Bisping goes after him. But it sounds like Bisping's already played that hand, and he's going after Romero. So no, that's just not going to happen. And it's annoying. And I'm not turning on Whitaker right now. But I will. If he becomes one of those guys that goes out and has a couple of good performances and all of a sudden is the next best thing, man, we will let you know when you're the next best thing. Don't let us know. We'll tell you.
Okay, bouncing around a little bit.
Bounce? Was that it for rumors?
Yeah.
Oh, darn. Those are fun. I wish there was more. Well, you had one. You were telling me about Nunes versus Shlemenko.
Yeah,
Help me out.
Shlemenko. Shevchenko.
Shevchenko. Shlemenko's a Bellator guy from the same region. Come on, give me a break there. Okay. Yeah, she's good, man. I'd like
names
to see that
hard.
Fight. Well, names
whoa,
are hard.
Whoa,
come on. You tell
on.
Me, Russian names are hard.
Hold on. Let's stop with the words are hard, names are hard. So we've got this bit, words are hard, names are hard. We do this hard thing. In the last week, I've seen two different big advertisements for companies out there using our bit. Have you noticed that? I think you actually called me on one and said, hey, somebody stole our bit.
Yeah, what did they say? A hiring. It was a resume. It was some resume site, whatever.com for resumes. And they said, hiring's hard.
Yeah, and then there was another one that remodeling's hard. So good. I'm glad everybody's listening to us. Garbrandt versus Dillashaw and Nunes versus Shevchenko at UFC 213. I mean, that's not much of a rumor. We already know that's going on. So the question I wanted to ask you is, Spike TV was here following you around, and not only do they actually don't follow you around, they actually dictate. What is that like? What is that like? Because the one day that they were in here, and the reason you asked me, hey, what's wrong with you, is because you were in full promo mode. And I was like, well, I'm just going to stand back. Do you get into that mindset because you're doing so many different interviews where you're just rolling all time? And what is that like? Because that is something very, very different than any of us have ever experienced. And I'd like to talk about that.
Oh, really?
A little bit.
Okay. I didn't know that was interesting. Yeah. So they come out. What they call it is fly on the wall. And all that means is, hey, we're going to follow you around. In this case, it was for 2 days. We're going to follow you around for 2 days and just pretend we're not here. Now, that's very hard to do, but that's the scenario. It's kind of like the moments between the moments, a day in a life. And then you sit down, you do your interviews, and you know, you do a little bit of that is planned. But essentially, it's flying. I get in a car, they get in a car with me. I go grab a cup of coffee, they come in with me. It's one of those deals. So yeah, we came down to podcast, so there they were, and that's where you encountered them. They were great, first off. Really great, really respectful guys, and they don't have to be. You know, they're writing the checks. I work for them. We do it their way. They tell me to dance, I dance. That's the way it goes. But that's just not how they handled it. They just, hey, we're going to turn this on, and a little microphone and a camera, and we'll see where this goes. The gentleman that was doing it, Lee, had worked with Mayweather for 2 years. And so I'm assuming that he did the 24/7s. I don't know what else Mayweather did, but the point is he knows how to do this kind of stuff, and this is just how he wants to do it. He just wants to be an observer. So for me, yeah, no, I don't think much of it, but I can tell you early on when those things happen, it changed the way I spoke. You know, it changed the way I spoke. There's something about when a camera's there and that red light is blinking that there is not a comfort level. The comfort level goes away, and all of a sudden you're performing. Whatever it is, whatever statement you're going to make or talk about, or even how you would order your lunch, there's just a different dialogue. And eventually you get used to it, and no, then you're just yourself. So I don't know that I can answer it today because I have gone through that process a few times. But early on, yeah, I remember it was weird. It was exciting, too. There was a different level of excitement. I don't get excited for it anymore. I kind of take it for granted, which is unfortunate because I think it is kind of an exciting thing when somebody's giving you that kind of attention. And so I don't still get that kind of a buzz from it. However, they were very nice guys.
Now, one of your coaches, Curtis Crawford, there's nothing wrong with his hearing because I've never had him. I've never said anything to Curtis where he said, "Hey, I didn't hear you." But boy, his voice is just so low. And they mic'd him up and did an interview with him. And man, he was spot on. He was high level. He knew everything about what you should be doing and what you wanted to work on. I mean, it was high level stuff, but I couldn't hear him. I could barely hear him. There's no way that ever makes it.
Yeah, Curtis is so smart, and his knowledge of this sport. I mean, he is one of those gems that's sitting out there. He's been at this since he was a teenager. Came up through the boxing gyms. Went off to Maurice Smith. Went through Randy Couture, trained with everybody, fought everywhere. You know, he was in the IFL. We were talking about that a moment ago. He's 51 years old with a life of knowledge. But, boy, he talks quiet. And it's one of these things. He's going to start training Paige VanZant. He's going to work on her kickboxing. And I did warn her. I just said, hey, you know, you're going to love this guy. He's a genius at this sport, but you're not going to be able to hear him. And she's like, well, what do you mean by that? And so I was acting it out. I was just mumbling to her, you know, kind of softly like this. And I said, he won't talk louder than this no matter what. And when you're in a gym and there's other guys yelling and there's sparring going on and then you've got the bells going off, beep, 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 right? You got that damn bell and timer that's in a gym like that. Then you've got a radio playing. It's like, Coach, I can't hear you. I just can't hear you. When he's calling numbers, 1, 2, 3, 2, 1, I got to be able to know what you said.
Well,
It's hilarious.
Uriah's hand coach,
Uriah Faber or Uriah Hall?
Uriah Faber.
Okay.
He doesn't speak English. So there's a rotation, and you guys have it now, where, because I know you've quit trying to figure out what he's calling, but you've learned what he's calling by his movements. So you can always figure that language out with hit and mitts. But the one thing he did say, and I've never, and he said, you and Jake are sparring. He said,
What did he say? I don't even know this, and I was there. What?
Okay, I'm gonna go back to one of the greatest wrestling lines ever. Norm Burney was a Hall of Fame wrestling coach. He was at Clackamas. He was my coach. He told a buddy of mine who was an All-American, passed away, Sean Carlson. Carlson, do something, even if it's wrong. Well, you guys are sparring, he says.
That is actually a really great line. That's funny.
He says, Curtis says, would somebody, anybody, throw a hook off a jab?
Yes. Okay, this isn't an old story.
Left hook off a jab.
This is 2 days ago. Yes, he was yelling
for
one of us.
No, I was saying that was the one time he was mad.
I understand what you're saying. I just thought you were going to tell an old Curtis story. This just happened. So Jake and I are sparring, but he kept saying hook off that jab. But I assumed he was talking to me because Ryan was kind of handling Jake, so I assumed Curtis was with me, but I didn't see the hook. I didn't see it. So I didn't do it. I wasn't positive he was talking to me. So then he started seeing it for Jake. So he was seeing it for. So finally he just threw his hands up and both of you hit the other one with a hook when the other one jabbed. The only reason we didn't do it is neither one. He didn't say who. He didn't say Chael hook off of his jab or Jake hook off. He just said hook off his jab. So we're both out there sparring hard. That was a hard session. We didn't know who he was telling to do it to. That's why we didn't do it. Are you talking to me or him? I didn't know.
You know what else Curtis is awesome at? Is if you ask him a stupid question, he will not give you an answer. You know, if he says, hey, you know what, you'll ask him a question. Hey, how do you do if you get in this situation and come out of that? And he's like, he'll think about it. Like, that's just stupid. You would just, whatever his advice is the only thing that you could do. And then you guys will be like, well, what if you did this? And he'll never say, yeah, go ahead and do that. He'll just stay on point. No, just do that. You know, just do that. I love everything about that guy. I wish he would talk a little louder for me.
I wish he'd talk a little bit louder. But yeah, he's got a ton of knowledge. You know, Clayton works that same way. It's like Clayton used to train with Marvin Hagler. I mean, he beat Floyd Mayweather. Floyd Mayweather only lost four fights. I'm talking about senior. One of them was to Clayton. But you got to come at him right, and everything's got to be right for some of that knowledge to come out. He doesn't just, it's not just going to come. It's just not going to come. There's a trust factor and there's a time factor, and Clayton's about, Clayton will only share the real knowledge with guys that he knows want to learn it. And Clayton did a litmus test on the guys at Team Quest. He was very disappointed with his results, but he still worked with those guys and gave the special attention to the ones that passed the test. And what the test was, is on Friday after practice, he told everybody on Sunday, on Sunday, 6 a.m., here's where you meet me. And the weather, you know, is Oregon. Could have been rain. Could have been snowing for all I can recall. But it was not ideal situations, right? And most of the fighters were younger guys. They're going out on Saturday night. I mean, 6 a.m. just isn't going to happen. But Clayton didn't say this is optional. He told the team, be here. It was for a run. We had to go meet on the track. Be here at 6 a.m. on Sunday. And three guys showed up. And those three guys, he put his attention into for the next 6 years. And all three of those guys went on and did really good things. But the rest of the guys didn't pass the test. And Clayton told us that. He wasn't a jerk about it at all. But he said, I need to know who wants to do it. You know, my time and my knowledge is worth something. And I'm going to give it to guys that want it. And that was it.
Yeah. And another thing I noticed about Curtis is, and this is awesome, generally, when those cameras start flowing, people start changing, you know, changing this, that, and the other. Those cameras were there in plenty of time. Boy, he put those girls, that class before you guys go, he put them through that workout. He didn't shortchange it a bit just because the big lights and TV production was there. I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the way it goes. I agree with that. So you're asking about the TV guys. I don't know that I have a better answer for you than that, but yeah, that's what they did. And then it's really hard, too. You know, the coaches the coaches will step up and perform a little bit when the cameras are there, too. Coaches will come in and Like I did a strength and conditioning workout. So Coach Dave wanted to make sure that he had, that he gave him enough footage. So the workout's just turning to be really tough. I guess that was the only point I was going to make. But yeah, the guys came in, they went out, everything was smooth, man. I know you signed up for BarkBox. Have you got your first delivery yet? It goes out the 15th of every month.
I have not.
Yeah, well, don't be upset. It goes out the 15th of every month, so you probably won't see it till May. Anybody else that wants BarkBox, go to getbarkbox.com/chael and enjoy the savings for hearing about it here at Your Welcome. Guys, here's how it works, okay? BarkBox was established in 2011. BarkBox is committed to making dogs happy, and they work with local and independent businesses to achieve this. In fact, they only work with vendors who also care deeply about the health and happiness of dogs. BarkBox is concerned with all dogs, even those who don't have a human to call their own. They support shelters and rescues and nonprofits across the U.S., and they have for many years. These guys help dogs find their forever homes. Having shipped over 16 million toys and treats so far, they've learned a ton about what it takes to engage a dog. Aside from the unique paw products from local vendors found in each BarkBox, the company itself designs many of their own products through their own Bark & Company brand. They paw pick the best all-natural treats and innovative toys to match a dog's unique needs, including allergies. Now, guys, how this works is real simple. You go to getbarkbox.com/chael one time. Enter some information, okay? They need to know a little bit about your dog. You got a little dog, you got a medium dog like I do, or you got a big dog. That's really what they need to know. There's a few more questions than that, but size really does matter because they tailor the treats and the toys around it. You sign up for BarkBox. It ships on the 15th of every month. Like clockwork, something will arrive at your door. You're going to have, from my own experience, and I've only had this three times, Joel. I'd love to hear what you get. Each time I've gotten six things, I thought I was supposed to get four. So they send between four and six things. I'll tell the listeners that. But they're going to send you some treats for your dog, and they're going to send you some toys. However, and this is what makes it fun, in my opinion, you don't know what you're going to get. You don't know how many treats versus how many toys or what they're going to be. And they can never tell you, because they're constantly coming out with new treats and new toys. So it's a bit of a surprise, not only for you, the owner, but for your pet. And it comes to your door, and you can do it all by signing up one time. Getbarkbox.com/chael. All right. Joel, anything? I wish when you came in with those sheets, and I think Brew does a fantastic job and really helps us to have clear talking points on this show. I love the rumors. I think the rumors are fun because once we know the answer, all we can give is an analysis and a prediction. I really do like the rumors, though, on the speculation of what should happen. And of all the things that you said, I really think that the Bisping and St. Pierre fight is likely to be the fight that happens, or that both guys will wait for that. I'm not sure where Romero would come in, and I have to assume that they're about to give Romero a fight. I know they offered Anderson the Romero fight, so they're trying to tie up Romero's dance card. I don't even know that he would be available.
I do have something else.
Go ahead.
I mentioned this yesterday real quick. Let's make this fight. One of the best guests we had on last year, and we need to get him on, was Matt Brown. I'm making Matt Brown-Mike Perry fight. I'm going to make that fight. There you go.
Start the rumor?
I'm going to start the rumor. That fight needs to happen. And then we'll have, like we did with Jake and Perry, we'll have them on the telephone, and those guys can go at it.
I love it. Boom. Everybody, go out. Enjoy your weekend. You have earned it. Until next Wednesday. For Joel, I am Chael, and you, of course, are welcome.
Baby.
Thanks for listening to Your Welcome with Chael Sonnen. Download new episodes every week at podcastone.com. That's podcastone.com.
I'm John Horn. I'm the host of Geffen Playhouse Unscripted. I'm here with our very first guest, Rainn Wilson.
Hi, John. Looks like I'm the first guest on the Geffen Unclothed Unscripted. Unscripted. Yeah, let's go with that.
A marriage made in heaven, I guess.
Or Westwood.
Tune in for some of our exciting upcoming guests. David Copperfield, Neil LaBute, Neil Patrick Harris, Josh Gad, Rita Wilson, and many more. Be sure to download new episodes every Wednesday on the Podcast One app and on iTunes. And don't forget to rate, review, and share.
And I'm Rainn Wilson, the first guest.
You are the very first guest.
This was a huge mistake.
Geffen Playhouse Unscripted.
Huge mistake.